Welcome back to the podcast, you beautiful soul. I've got an absolute legend with me today. I've been following this man for a long time. I got the pleasure of hearing him speak on the Gold Coast at a One Life Club event. I love the introduction. Academic outlaw who's dominating the branding scene with his... He's the founder of Australia's fastest growing branding agency, Rival. And he's currently writing a branding book, which we're going to lean into with Wiley. And he's got so much... He's got so much authenticity to him. He's got so much depth to him and so much value. So I really look forward to just sort of jumping down some rabbit holes with you, my man. But Dane Walker, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, man. Excited to be here.
Man, firstly, man, how are you personally and professionally?
Yeah, I'd say pretty good. Things are pretty good on the home front. I got two kids, beautiful partner, and I live up the road from my agency. So I don't even have to drive to work and just walk down here. Yeah, so the agency's doing wonderful. We've got an incredible crew. And now we're starting to produce a lot more content as an agency, as well as myself. And I think for the last 4 years has been basically building this company. And now I'm returning back to my roots, which got this whole thing started, which was producing content to educate people on how they can do all of this for themselves.
That's awesome, man. Really inspiring. Yeah. Let's, man, for people that just don't know who you are, if you could just give us the elevator pitch of your story, who is Dane Walker?
Yeah, so I was working 9 to 5 at Telstra selling phones. And previous to that, I had a whole bunch of experience in the sales space. And I did MLM for a couple of years and I was really good at that.
Awesome.
So I always had this business bone in my body. I always would, whatever job I had, I'd always kind of feel like I own the place. It's more instinctual than anything. It was always looking for optimization, looking for things I can improve. But yeah, a little bit about me, man. Basically, I'm a brand strategist and we work with companies and celebrities and personal brands on how they can position themselves, how they can communicate themselves, and how they can get more of the attention that they're looking to get. So I do that as an educator and also with my team here. We facilitate workshops and create branding material for companies and people.
Awesome, man. Something I love about my podcast, very selfishly, I get to learn. This is like, I get to be a student pretty much every single day I have a guest on here. Man, I'm someone who, I love content. I love making content. I post a lot of content. I was just filming some reels before we jumped on this call. And something I've struggled with is branding. I've probably attracted the ultimate guest here today to help me with it. Can you just understand, let's go big picture and then we'll just dive down all these little rabbit holes with it. What is branding to you?
Yeah, to me, it's an interesting one. It's a bit of a what I like to call a contronym. Okay. And a contronym is a word that is a contradiction of itself. Okay. And this is why branding is such a fugazi, because everyone has a definition, but it's hard to kind of pinpoint what it is and what it isn't. I've gotten into a lot of debates about this with with people in academia. And my most viral piece of content was on LinkedIn. And I was debating with the head of marketing for Uber, and Mark Ritson, who's an incredible individual. Both of these individuals I respect, but we're having a heated discussion around what is branding and how to implement it. And I think that the reason it's been debated so much is because it's changing. Mm-hmm. What branding used to be 10 years ago and what it is today is a very different beast. So my definition is back to the contronym statement. So branding is a contronym. If you take the word dust means it's present, but it also means to remove.
Yeah.
So what I mean by that is branding is 100% about how you communicate yourself outwardly to those you wish to get attention from. That could be colors, it could be fonts, it could be photography, it could be copywriting, like whatever you're using to communicate, then it's 100% about the eye of the beholder. So the person who receives the communication and then decides, what do I do with this information? What do they think of you? How do they perceive you? So how do they feel about your company? What do they think your company is? How do they feel about you as a content creator? Yeah. What do they think that it is that you are? So branding is about what I say I am, but it's also about who you think I am. So it's difficult because I can control how I communicate, but I can't control how people receive it. So if I craft something and put it out there in the world, it's no longer mine. It's out there. Like that piece of content is up to other people to decide who I am. So for example, I posted the same post on Instagram and LinkedIn. And on LinkedIn, it created a debate in academia. And on Instagram, people were like, that's a cool post.
Yeah.
Two very different audiences, two very different perceptions. So you can't control it 100% of the time, but you can influence how people may perceive you. And that's the art of branding. The art of branding is, how do I progressively communicate more effectively, communicate better, so I can have a better handle on how I am perceived. And that art form is figuring out what does and doesn't work. And yeah, there's a lot of tools in that. And but branding at the end of the day is what you think I am, not what I think I am. It's all about the eye of the beholder and positioning yourself to make as much impact on that as possible.
A beautiful answer. And where was the, what was the conflict that you had that the other guys didn't agree with?
Yeah, so I put up a post and I was basically describing the difference between branding and marketing.
Yeah.
And essentially I was saying branding is more long-term, whereas marketing is more short form, because marketing requires so much constant work. You're constantly a mechanic on the business. You're like, how do I get ROI? We've got too many leads. Let's turn the tap down. Let's turn it back up again. So for me, marketing is like orchestrating a business to function and to do all the things it needs to do to get leads, get attention, convert them, bring them into the process and so on. It's a lot more than that, but marketing is different for every company, different for every individual. It's what's called a marketing mix. So what tools you use to manage and operate your marketing is very different to what I might use, right? And the debate essentially was, I put up the post and it was a bunch of things like that, like branding short-term, marketing is long-term. Branding is more about like the who and the why, and then marketing is more about the what I'm doing to get that across the line. And a lot of people just jumped in and they said, who's this TikTok guy who thinks he knows marketing? And they started ripping into the post. The funny thing was it lit a fuse, because a lot of content creators, designers, people in business, entrepreneurs, personal brands jumped in and they were like, dude, Dane's totally right. But it was only people that had academic backgrounds that were debating it. And it's because I think the way universities and so on train what branding is needs to evolve.
Yeah.
Branding is very different to what it was 10 years ago. And, but yeah, debate was just, it was just a simple one. I was explaining the difference between branding and marketing in like 60 seconds, and people got fired up about it being wrong. But at the same time, 60 to 70% of the audience were voicing an opinion that was in support of me.
Yep.
Maybe 40% weren't, but yep, the ones that weren't, they were more, because they were angry, they were like commenting. And it created this giant debate, and we had like over 8,000 reposts. Wow. On that particular post. And yeah, it was really fun. It was really fun to kind of like light a fuse and jump in there and debate with people. But at the same time, it's also like it touched a nerve, because so many people don't understand the difference. And I was just trying to have a crack at explaining it. To be fair, a minute's probably too short. So yeah, there was a lot that was up to interpretation.
Yeah.
I think you need maybe a solid 20 minutes, 30 minutes to really explain the difference, but I was having a crack at it nonetheless. Yeah.
I love it, man. I relate to that big time, because I do 90 seconds now with the longer reels and shorts, but yeah, I do stuff around mental health, self-worth, healing from your past trauma and stuff like that. And it's like, you get like that much, there's so much you could speak about for hours. So to take like that, you can interpret it and get triggered and all that good stuff. man, what's for you, I'm a steps guy. I'm a pillars person. Like I'm a like sort of analytical sort of minded person like that. What would you say are like the sort of main pillars or the main steps for someone to build a solid, authentic brand?
Yeah, I think the main ingredients, it's part marketing, part branding, part advertising. So like you got to keep in mind that these three things are really joined at the hip. Like marketing impacts branding, branding impacts marketing. It's like imagine a triangle with a triangle upside down in the middle of it. And then you've got marketing, branding, and advertising. Yep. And in the middle, you have sales. All four of them are very different tools that a business needs to have.
Yep.
And I think the process for branding, I think branding impacts everything else. And it's a great place to start. A lot of people start with sales or start with marketing and start with advertising. Then at some point they land on branding and go, we need to build a better brand than what we have. And I did the same thing, right? Like branding was kind of a late piece of the puzzle when I first started producing content. Then I realized I got to figure this thing out.
Yeah.
So for me, branding is actually a great place to start, but it's really rare for people to start in that place.
Yeah.
And the problem it creates is, let's just say you're up and running for a year or two, then you sit down and build your branding. Branding will unearth a lot of questions that you have to answer. And most business owners I talk to, they think they have it. But it's kind of shocking to go through a workshop and to identify, holy crap, man, I actually don't know a lot about a lot of things when it comes to communication, because communication is a very complicated art form in and of itself. And branding is about really about communication and creating an experience and landing in the eye of the beholder and building an idea in their head. But for me, if you're to break it into a process, the first thing you want to think about is like who the hell are we? Like, who am I, or what is my company? And one of the things that people can get stuck or caught up in is my product's better. I'm like, that's cool. It's great that you have a better product, but no one's going to care about your product if they don't know you exist. So the product caring has to come later on. So I think oftentimes, and you know, people sit down and they go, our product's better, look at our features, look at our benefits, and so on and so forth. And that's fine. That's like, you need to have that stuff. Branding is more about like, who are we, like as a collective of people? So if you take Virgin Airlines and Qantas and you say, well, who are they as a group of people? Well, they both are at the same airport. They both have air hostesses. They both have pilots. They both have the same checkout baggage, luggage system. Like, the features and benefits are essentially the same thing. But if you ask yourself, who is Virgin and who is Qantas, they're very different entities. Virgin's a lot more about entertainment and lifestyle, and Qantas is a lot more about heritage and tradition and respectability. That's branding, you know what I mean? It's like there's nuances, that tone is slightly different. Then if you attach someone like Richard Branson to Virgin, he adds a face to the brand, and then you get a part of his DNA in the brand as well. I know he doesn't own it anymore, but especially early days, Virgin and Qantas were very different with their experiences and how people felt about those two particular brands. You might be team Qantas, I might be team Virgin, but that in and of itself is the brand. So the first step is like, well, who are we? And it's hard to answer that question. It's really hard if you say, well, who are you, man? Explain me to you. And it's like, where do I start? So a good place to start is like, well, okay, what's your story? What led you to this point? So we usually, the first thing I do in a workshop is we dive into someone's story. Like, what's your past? Where are you presently? And what future do you desire? Past, present, future. It's important to kind of know that. And then if someone explains that to you, you can start to sense, oh, you're this kind of person. So when I work with a CEO, a lot of what we do with a company is we try to inject their DNA into the company. So if I work with a CEO who's very fiery, high energy, braggadocious and boisterous per se, it's like, man, we probably need to bring some of that energy into the brand. That's probably who you are and maybe why you're in this industry and why you approach things the way you approach it. So there's nuances to it. So we do the story. Then we go into like, well, who are you? And a great way to answer the who is if you look at, okay, well, Nike described this really well in an elevator pitch. Nike's elevator pitch is, we make shoes for athletes of every sport to give them confidence. So there's a few things in there. We make shoes. It's like what they do. For athletes, who they do it for, in every sport category. So then you're like, okay, specifically your niche is sport, to give them confidence. And that's like the impact you want to have. And I think to answer the who question is like, well, what are you? How do I define that a bit further? So, okay, shoes is quite ambiguous. Oh, for athletes. Now I have a picture in my head. And it's in every sport category. Okay, that's the territory you want to dominate. And to give people confidence is to that last piece. It's like, this is the feeling we're trying to evoke. So then if you look at Nike, like if we just take Nike as a case study, all of their messaging always has five or six things. Someone's always in motion, taking action. So you're always seeing someone hitting a tennis ball or jumping for the shot or running down an alleyway or whatever it might be. Someone's always in motion, always in action. So that's one of their themes. Two is that person's in a position of power. They feel confident. They're smashing the ball. They're slamming the ball in the hoop. Like they're conquering whatever it is that they're going out to conquer. They're in a state of being relentless. They're in the pursuit of greatness. And it's not about winning, but it's about taking action. Just do it. So if you look at those themes, how did Nike get to those themes? Well, they started with branding. So the branding was like, who are we? Now, if you look at the target audience, so like, well, who are we speaking to? The steps are like story, who are we, why do we exist, right? We make shoes for athletes. Who's it for? Athletes. Why should they care? Because we're the greatest at this vertical, right? And Nike weren't always in that position. Just a few decades ago, Adidas owned that whole industry for the most part. And Nike took that monopoly back because of branding, because they were more relevant, they had more credibility, and they became more memorable than Adidas. It's not because they had a bigger distribution chain, more money, better features and benefits, better product materials. They didn't lean on benefits, products, and materials. They lent on brands. So they had better messaging, better photography, better ad campaigns. They did stuff with athletes, and then they slowly started to gobble up the market.
Yeah.
So story, who are we? Why do we exist? Who do we speak to? Why should they listen to us? They're kind of the bedrock or the foundation of a brand. Then you can bounce into the more nuanced side of things. And the nuances might be like, what do we believe in? What's our company culture? What's our tone of voice? Right, Nike's is power and action and being relentless, pursuit of greatness. That's their tone. So then you can understand that, well, an athlete would like that. But here's the cool thing. If you looked at that brand strategy kit, you might think to yourself, well, only athletes would buy this. That's where Nike's genius is. Anyone who aspires to feel like an athlete would look at Nike and go, I'm going to go buy a pair of those shoes.
Yeah.
So this is where people get stuck. They think, if I have a specific target audience, I'm going to exclude everyone else. But actually the opposite happens. You become really attractive to your target demo. And then that makes you interesting to other people because it's unique, it's differentiated, it's different. And Starbucks do the same thing. So Starbucks, they actually target working professionals. But every time I've been to a Starbucks, you've got students, college kids, mom, dad. You might have a mom with their kids. You might have grandpa and grandma in there having a tea or coffee together. And you'll notice to yourself, well, Starbucks has a wide range of people. But if you look at their brand strategy, it says target working professionals in busy districts of business. And then if you look at where all their stores are located, predominantly, they're somewhere where there's a big commute, like public transport, and people are on their daily commute to work. And they're right next to a bunch of office buildings. So people go there on lunch. They position themselves in the market for the working professional, but everyone else goes there anyway. So the biggest dilemma I've seen in branding is people don't want to go niche enough. They don't want to be targeted enough. They're trying to be a bit more open to everyone. But the problem that has is you become too ambiguous. You don't mean anything if you're trying to speak to everyone, but you mean something if you're trying to speak to one person really well.
Man, you just, this has been just my background and my story. I've come from the fitness industry, opened up studios, sold two of them. I've got one under management and I've always enjoyed coaching, mindset coaching, self-worth before we obviously click record on this. And something I've been battling with even for the last year or so is the niche is actually, if you speak to everyone, you speak to no one and getting clear in your niche, but you just gave me a light bulb that it's like, if you get like Nike, you get so good at that. There's people that aspire to be like them and you'll actually attract them into it as well. I thought that was really, that was.
Well, if you look at Gymshark, right? Like they target the hardcore gym addicts.
Yeah.
Now everyone's wearing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like what happens is if you become very relevant to one particular crowd, they'll advocate you. So think about the athlete thing. If you see Michael Jordan on television flying through the air and slamming a ball in a hoop,
yeah.
Any 8-year-old kid's going to see that and go, "Mom, I need a pair of Nikes."
Yeah.
Right? Because it's the sense, it's that feeling that you get. And I remember I was 6 when I saw Michael Jordan fly through the air and slam a ball in a hoop. And it was 1996. I was 6 years old.
Wow.
And my uncle at the time said, "Oh, you like basketball?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he passed me a Chicago Bulls hat. And it was the fucking coolest moment I ever had when I was a kid because I put the hat on and I was watching. I just felt like I felt this sense of like greatness.
Yeah.
And then my whole life I started buying Nikes because of that feeling, right? So then I'd never been an athlete, you know what I mean? But it gave me a feeling about myself. So people tend to buy in fashion, they tend to buy things that represent who they are. Yeah. They represent a belief system. So we're both wearing LSKD.
Yeah.
You're wearing a hoodie, I'm wearing a hat. And you know, I go to the gym. I'm not considering myself as an athlete, but I like the healthy lifestyle. So this brand appeals to me. It speaks to me because I'm like, this is a part of who I am. I like being healthy and active. So why not promote that on a hat? But yeah, I think for you, man, like the niches thing, people get tripped up on it because niching doesn't mean you're being exclusive or you're excluding people. It just means I'm really making sure I am serving a community really well. And it's really clear that that's the community I'm here to serve. Because I think if, let's just say Nike weren't targeting athletes, they're just targeting the shoe market at large, I don't think they would be the size they are because it wouldn't be as interesting. It wouldn't be as exciting. It wouldn't be as vibrant or communicative. It would just be like, we are a shoe brand that makes shoes for sports. Yeah. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like comparing maybe ASICS to Nike. ASICS yeah. cool, but like Nike has this pop culture component to it.
Yeah.
But the only, the analogy I use is you could put 1,000 watts of energy into a light bulb and you can light a room. You can put that same 1,000 watts of energy into a laser and you can cut a hole through steel.
Yeah.
So if you can turn your brand into a laser, it actually becomes more potent and more effective with advertising, more effective with marketing. And then other people come along for the journey anyway.
Mm. And then if you were to lean into that a little bit more for, and I'm speaking for me, I'm getting a bit of a free advice out of this, but also I've got a lot of coaches that come on to that follow my stuff as well. Mm-hmm. If you were to lean into coaches specifically or just businesses as a whole, what are some exercises to get clearer on that niche? So you're kind of going, who am I? What's your story, past, present, future? But then how do you sort of like niche it down? Like as an example, I think of, I did an exercise online or something about like going like a couple layers deep. Like you've got, for example, like say weight loss, then you've got women's weight loss, then mum's weight loss, then busy mum's weight loss, then corporate busy mum, whatever, weight loss. And you sort of like go layers deep. Is that like an exercise that you do? Or what can you do? What would you suggest for someone to sort of start to go from even a coach or a consultant or a personal trainer and start to actually dive into who their niche is?
Yeah, great question, man. So I have a background. I worked at World Gym. I managed a few clubs, sold supplements. And I used to do a lot of consulting with PTs.
Yeah.
You know, so two of the most successful PT students I've had, one which was a client in my agency, one which was just someone I helped in early on.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's like, okay, I'm a personal trainer. Let's just say we'll use that as an example. When you're looking at your target audience, this framework could work for any business. You're an accountant, you sell e-com stuff, you're in supplements, you're a PT, whatever you're doing, the same framework applies. And that the place we start with that is we just say to people, write down all the potential clients. It's a process of elimination. Like who could potentially become a client? And this is really interesting when you do this process. You just write down as many as you can think of. So if you're a PT, you're like elderly, athletes, students in high school playing sport, the guy who wants to gain muscle, the guy who's too skinny and can't gain weight, the woman who wants to lose weight, the woman who's postnatal pregnancy, right? You just write down a list of everything and then you just say to that person, okay, if you had to take a highlighter and highlight the ones that you're most excited to work with in the PT situation, they might immediately say to you, well, I really enjoy postnatal pregnancy training women. Yeah. And then you say, why? Oh, because of da 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 da. They start writing things down. So the whole idea of brand strategy is to not try to answer a big question. It's to take a big question and to break it into bite-sized pieces. So if I say, who's your target audience? It's too hard to answer that question.
Yeah.
But if I say, write down all the potential audiences, and then let's just say you write down 13, yeah. I say, who else? It goes to 15. Yeah. If you had to think of anyone else, who would it be? You're like, oh, maybe you might add another 5 or 6. Like you want to get that whole list in front of you. Go through and start highlighting which ones. And it's really easy to eliminate by highlighting. And if yeah. you can't do that, flip it the other way around. If you had to take 5 out, which ones would you take out, right? So either way, you're ruling out and zoning in on what ones get you the most excited. Because if you're a business owner, and I've done this myself, and I'll transit from personal branding just to myself for a moment.
Yeah.
When I sat down with my team and I did this exercise, I had the team do this together with me, and I was the client. They said to me, Dane, like, who do you prefer to work with? And I was like, look, optimally, I prefer to work with people that... I wrote down all the categories. So I wrote down like fashion, retail, commerce, law firms. I wrote down, you know, accountants. I wrote down building companies. I wrote down real estate, everything. And then we started like highlighting things. And what actually happened was through that process of the team taking me through that, I said to my team, I'm like, you know what? I feel like it's people that are already established in business that are my favorite clients to work with. And then my team were like, why? And I was like, well, they have the resources to expend. They have experience. They have the confidence that they can execute.
Yeah.
They have, you know what I mean? You start writing all these things down and then you're like, okay, now we're starting to zoom in on an audience, yeah. Right? And that's when we did a rebrand. So I kept feeding that list down. So back to the personal brand, the personal trainer.
Yeah.
Let's just say she highlights postnatal pregnancy women. Then you ask these questions. You're like, okay, why do you want to work with her? And just answer the question selfishly.
Yeah.
So she's like, well, mom spent a lot of money, right? Because there's so much going on. They're willing to spend money to get their health back. They're in a very desperate place. So yeah. She's like, they never have problems paying their invoices. I'm like, great, selfish answer. What else? She's like, moms are always in groups. If I get one mom, she'll bring her friends, right? And she's like, okay, great referrals from moms. Maybe let's just say the skinny guy trying to gain muscle mass won't bring his friend along, but the mom will. So then we're writing down all the selfish reasons why they're a good client. And then we answer all the questions of why they might be a bad client. What are her challenges and what are her problems?
Yeah.
And she's like struggling for energy, too busy to get to a session, right? She started writing down all the problems a mom had, all the reasons why she's great. And then we write down, well, what are all the solutions for the mother? And this is still targeting. What are your solutions for the mother? Well, I can help her with her food. I can go to her house and we can do a workout in her backyard. I have a friend who's a nanny, so they can pay me a little bit extra and I can bring the nanny with me. So she had all these incredible solutions for that particular target audience. Now she's a really attractive offering. So if you're a mother and you walk into a gym and you've got the PT who specializes in postnatal, you know, training, and the PT who's just going to help you lose weight, which one are you going to pick? So for the mother, she's like, no brainer. And she'll pay 3, 4, 5 times the amount of money to get that experience versus just paying someone to just help her train. Right. So I did this with another personal trainer and his answers were quite different. Funny story. So I get a phone call one day and on the phone I hear, hey bruv, just got out of prison. I wanna talk to you. And I was like, I'm a curious guy. I'm like, let's book in the Zoom call, get on Zoom. He gets on and he tells me that he's had a phone in prison. And I was like, was it legal? And he's like, let's not talk about that. I was like, he's like, I was following your content in prison. And while I was in prison, I did a program to become a PT through that. And his background was in coke possession. So he got done for coke. And he served 2 years in prison. And he said, I got a baby girl. I got a partner at home. I'm changing my life. And I was like, no problem, man. Sounds good. And he says, I want to become a PT. I don't have any money yet, but I wanted to talk to you. I'll go find the money legally, I promise. And I was like, cool. And he's like, where do I start? How do I build my brand? And I just said to him, like, go sign up to a gym. And he's like, I don't want to work for anyone. I said, where's your target audience? He's like, at the gym. And I was like, see what I'm saying? He's like, okay. So he signs up to the gym. I gave him some free coaching. Within 2 weeks, he filled out his whole schedule. Because every young 17-year-old guy who's trying to get jacked, wants to be a bad boy, wants to train with the guy that just got out of prison. So I was like, lean into it, man. That's your branding. He's like, okay, cool. And his whole brand IP was how to not be, I guess, weak and how to be, how to become more of a man, like how to step into manhood and put away childish things. That was his kind of ethos.
Yeah.
So he wasn't just a PT. He was someone who's going to help you on the journey of becoming a man. So then that became his branding. He's like, I've got a rough background, and he likes targeting kids that have rough backgrounds because he can relate. He's really relevant to them. And they're like, man, if this guy can do it, maybe I can. And then he takes them on that journey. So the point is target audience. It's Marty Neumeier has it in his book, The Brand Gap. And he says, instead of trying to create a parade and start a parade from scratch, he said, go find a parade and lead the parade. There's a target audience out there for every PT, every gym, every business to go, who in the market's not being served? And how do I serve them better than the competition? Because then you can dominate that niche. But here's the interesting thing. Once you dominate and own that niche or that category or that sphere of influence, you can pop your head out and go, let's expand over there. Let's expand over there. Like nail something and get momentum and then expand out to other things. So when I started, I was a content agency. Then we did logos. Then we did color palettes. Then we did websites. We started to expand out to other things. But here's the thing. If your product offering expands, can you still define a target audience? And for us, it's disruptive, go get them, gung-ho, maverick entrepreneurs. So people that aren't afraid of just going for it, they're the audience that really resonate with our agency. Because if you look at my competitors' agencies, their websites are really clean and minimal. You go to my website, there's like rip bags, tigers. It's like really gnarly. Yeah. And that really speaks to people. And they just are excited to get on a call because they're like, these guys are different. They get me. Yeah.
Man, beautiful stories, man. You obviously got so much knowledge. This is like just flows from you, man. It's thanks, really, man. Awesome. Really awesome. I've got an odd question that I like to ask my guests. And I ask this question because I like to understand what's going on inside your head, essentially. So what do you think about that you don't get to talk about very often?
That's interesting, man. I would say probably more of the psychological side of things.
Yeah, please lean into that.
Yeah, so I think oftentimes, you know, people, when they're building a business or when they're starting to create content, there's a few roadblocks and they might be disguised as other things. So we might give it a label like, let's just say imposter syndrome. It's a label you put on yourself, like, oh, I can't produce content because I have imposter syndrome. You've slapped a label in your head and you're like, that's why.
Yeah.
And I think oftentimes when I'm doing branding with a client or a CEO or personal brands, I'm very much working a lot on them and their psychology, more so than creating the brand for them.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is we call it brand facilitation. That's just like what we've deemed it, yeah. But it's really just like ushering and supporting a client. And a few things that I make note of is like, you know, I think by and large, like society is over-indexed by positive emotions.
Yeah.
And when I spoke on the Gold Coast, a lot of people came up to me and they said to me, Dane, how do I get motivation to start my brand? And I would ask them, why do you need motivation? And they're like, so I can get started. And I'm like, is that all you need? And they're like, yeah, if I was just motivated, I would get started. And I think we plug into this idea that we need motivation to get our brand started. Motivation, however, isn't really permanent. It's a state of mind that you'll transit in and out of. What people really need is a plan, the discipline to execute, and the commitment to follow through.
Mm.
And I think a lot of the times I'm having conversations with people, especially personal brands, it's a commitment issue. It's a fear issue, and mainly a fear of regret. Like, what happens, Dane, if I post content and it fails?
Yeah.
I'm like, awesome. You've got plenty of fuel in that situation. They're like, what do you mean? Like, they're so scared of what people might think of them or what might happen. Even with companies, they're like, we don't want to be too different in our market. We don't want to be too disruptive because this fear of like being seen or fear of being rejected. And I think it stems back to fear of regret. If I have regret, which is one of the most yuckiest emotions you could ever have, is like, no one wants to feel a sense of regret. But if you can microdose regret, it's really powerful as a motivator. So when I started making content, I hated how I looked. I hated my voice. I hated the lighting. I hated the sounds, like everything about it. I hated it. And there was a lot of regret. Like, why did I post this? What are people going to think of this?
Yeah.
And then I was like, let's consume that as energy and let's post again. Let's just go 1% better this time.
Yeah.
And I think if you can use those negative emotions as fuel rather than constantly looking for the positive emotions, it's actually really powerful because you defang fear when you start posting content per se. Like, just the really easy exercise for people is to start producing content. You rip the fangs out of the tiger and you're like, it's not actually that scary.
Yeah.
Once you've posted 10, 20 times, the fear leaves. And I think, yeah, something I don't talk much about is psychology and kind of what it takes to build a business. Yeah.
Awesome, man. If we go one layer in, then we'll dive into a different topic quickly. What is some of the, I guess, psychological, mental challenges, and I don't even like roadblocks, opportunities, lessons you've had to learn from a personal, professional side of things when it comes to building a business? Because I talk about a lot, like, you attract people and circumstances to reveal the parts of you you haven't worked on yet. So whether it's your insecurities, your body image, your confidence, your self-worth, whatever, you will attract those things. And Wayne Dyer used to use this analogy. It's like, if you've got an orange and you squeeze an orange, orange juice comes out because it's an orange. If you squeeze a human with pressure, whatever's inside is going to come out. And that's where in business, if you've got a lot of anger, stress, or whatever, overwhelm, when you've got the pressure, that's generally what comes out. So I'd love to know from you, what's been some of the challenging lessons and opportunities for you along your, to have a team of 22, plus a personal brand, plus being a partner, kids, and all the above. It's like, yeah, I'd love to know, what are some of those challenges?
Yeah, I think early on, like at the beginning, the challenges were like being responsible for others. So like my childhood, my background, I've always been responsible for myself, and I moved around a lot. So I never really had a family base or a friendship base, right? So then when I was in sales and I had a team, like that was one thing, but then hiring someone and then having to pay their wage and then having to be 100% responsible for that person's like income, was quite overwhelming for me. And that unearthed some stuff around insecurity, dependency issues. You know, it brought a lot of stuff up early on. And now I would say like some of the challenges I've experienced lately is like, I'm very trusting. Like, so this sounds really bad, but I'm like, I meet someone and I give them 100% trust, like off the jump. I'm like, I look for the good in everyone. And I think sometimes it can whiplash and burn me a little bit because, you know, I might place an idea of that person on them, but it's not their fault, right? So I might be like, oh, this person is great for XYZ reasons. And then I get whiplash and I get a burnt. And then I'm like, oh man, this person like stiffed me up. Like, how dare they? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I've heard Simon Beard talk about this with his wife. She's the opposite.
Yeah.
And, you know, people have to earn her trust. And he was saying how like, she's always like, yeah, I told you so. I knew that person would do that. Right. So I'm kind of in the same bracket where I'm maybe too trusting, and I've had to learn how to, be more adaptive in situations where I don't know people, and to give myself the opportunity to have them reveal who they really are before I like fully trust them. So that's like a little thing I've learned. The second thing would have to be just having like certainty about what I'm doing. Mm. Like, I know this sounds weird, but again, this is where childhood can creep back up on you, right? Like, when I was a kid, I went through a lot of bullying. I moved around a lot. I had parents that were going through stuff. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of uncertainty in my childhood, like tremendous amounts. But the gift of that is I can be really calm in the storm. Like, there can, all hell can be breaking loose and I'll be zen. So it's a gift. Yeah. But at the same time, I needed to balance that by having more certainty. So maybe I had too many unknowns, too many blind spots. And my mind naturally goes, it's cool, I'll come back to it. But what I've had to train myself on doing is like looking at my blind spots, confronting those things, which can be unnerving and feel like I get even more uncertainty, which is uncomfortable. But then by looking at it and making a plan around it, I get more certainty and more confidence. So I'm just trying to be more aware of how I've been wired, and I'm trying to rewire myself to have more certainty, more structure, more process in my life, and less uncertainty, because that's my baseline. So I'm just trying to learn how to change my baseline, essentially, if that makes sense.
Yeah, beautiful answer, man. I like hearing people, because I think I'm very guilty. I've got a lot of similarities to your story of what you're saying, the sort of the people pleaser, the always trusting and getting burnt. I've had that a couple of times. And it's, I just like to hear a little bit. So underneath the layer of the people that we see on social media, because you can see your brand, your business, and what you're doing. And it's like, fuck, you're still working on you too, man. Like, everyone you see is a human being figuring their shit out. So
everyone, man. Yeah, so. I've met billionaires and they're still working on themselves. And they got, you know, I think this idea that to be an entrepreneur, you have to be perfect is kind of, it's rubbish. You know what I mean? People do place these roadblocks on like, if I could become XYZ, I'll become an entrepreneur. But it's actually like, man, no one's perfect. We're all human beings. We're all here to figure it out. you know, we're all working on stuff. It's some people more aware of what they need to work on than others. And that's about it.
And that's the work, right? So, man, just, I know we're conscious of time. So, you've obviously mentioned about a book that you're writing. I know you've also mentioned about a 90-day challenge. I actually heard you talk about that in person when I came and saw you in person. I'd love to hear you just talk about, for, I guess, people getting started who either have a business and they want to sort of work on their personal brand or just up their content, or it's just someone wants to start making content. If you could lean into the 90-day challenge and also just talk about the book that that you're working on at the moment.
Yeah, so the 90-day challenge, really for me, that's how I started my journey. So when I was working at Telstra in a full-time job, I just made a commitment. I was like, for 90 days straight, I'm going to make content. And I had no idea how to post on social media. I'd seen a few pages I liked, and I just decided I'm going to figure it out and expose myself for 90 days. And back to the fear thing, right? I had all the fear. I'm like, what are my colleagues going to think? What are my friends going to think? And I've heard it before when I occasionally make content here and there. I just heard comments and I was like, okay, it is uncomfortable. Yeah. And I think in that discomfort, like, if you look at here's my comfort zone, content creation for me was definitely outside of my comfort zone. So I wasn't like born with the gift of the gab. I just decided to throw myself in the fire, baptism by fire, and just figure it out. And I think there's so much beauty in baptism by fire, because what happens is you dive in, you're like, I'm going to post every day. And you make a commitment in your brain. It's not an option. It's like Tony Robbins talks about. It's a must, not a should.
Yeah.
So I made content a must. And I was like, every day I'm going to post content. The 90-day challenge is really about removing distractions, making a commitment, and just going hell for leather for 90 days straight just to see what happens. It's really an experiment you can do with yourself. And if you can actually follow through on it, some really beautiful things happen. And everyone I've seen go through this and actually execute my plan for 90 days, not one of them finishes and stops making content. Every single one of them has gone on to build businesses, gone on to succeed in some way, learn a tremendous amount of it. And it's by compressing a large amount of energy in a short combustible time. So like, imagine if I had a rock or two rocks and I was going to say to you, dude, I'm going to make a fire. You're like, okay, cool. And I'm going to clack them together once a day. Like, what's the chances of me lighting a fire, right? But if I sit there back to back clacking those things together, it's going to create heat, it's going to create sparks, and I'm going to have a much greater chance of catching a fire and then burning the forest down, right? So if you're trying to burn the forest down and go viral, you need to clack some heat together, and you need to do it in a very combustible time frame. And I would just say at least once a day for 90 days, two if you can handle it. And most people say, well, I can't do that because of time. But the average Australian spends 4 hours a day either on Netflix gaming or on their phone, on TikTok, or whatever it is. Insane. That's the average. So whether you need to wake up earlier or shift your life around, just make time for it and start producing content. That's the challenge, really. And I would just, this is all I did. I did 10 pages of a book every day. I do a bit of exercise every day. I'd eat clean and I would create content. That's what I did for 90 days straight. At the end of the 90 days, I had $72,000 in my PayPal.
Well done.
And I was working at Telstra day one. And I'm not saying this to impress you, but just to impress upon you, a lot can happen when you compress time frames.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So this is the biggest enemy, is like the fear of doing that. And it's, if you put yourself in that amount of pressure, it's like doing a workout challenge. When you work out every day for 90 days, you're going to be fit by the end of it. But if you work out once a week for a year, it's not the same. So if you're going to expel that energy, expel it together and compress it. Regarding if anyone is in a position of building a personal brand or a company brand, I just invite them on the challenge. And if they do the challenge with me, we just make a verbal agreement. If you miss a day, you eat a dog biscuit. And it's just kind of a joke. No one's eaten any dog biscuits yet. It's great. But yeah, if anyone's interested in doing this, I am writing a book about it. The book's called The 90 Day Brand Plan, and it's going to be released May next year. And there will be an audio version as well. So I'm just taking, you know, all my knowledge and experience in business and piling into this book. And I'm excited about it, man. The other thing we're doing is we're launching an event to do a 2-day bootcamp version of the book. For people that are interested, and that's going to be in November, probably 26th, here in Sydney.
Oh, powerful, man. Really powerful. Man, tons of knowledge to you. And I feel like we're just scraping the surface of what you've got, man. You've got a lot of depth to you. We'd even talk much about business and structure. It was obviously mainly the branding, a little bit of psychology in there as well, which is beautiful. If people want to connect with you, whether it's for the challenge, for the book, for the events, for yourself, where's the best place they can find you?
Just on Instagram or LinkedIn, and just send me a DM. I personally manage my account on Instagram. So if you send me a message on Instagram, I will reply to you. I get back to everyone. Yeah.
Awesome. He got back to me, by the way, guys. That's fact. He's here today because he got back to me. So, man, the final question I like to leave on a personal note for my guest, what is something that you're working on a personal level that the world doesn't get to see?
Great question, man. Like for me or like something I'm building?
No, you personally.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'm working on becoming a better father. And you know, not that I'm a bad father or anything, but I think it's similar to, you know, I guess looking at my childhood and all the lessons from it.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to be a very present, proactive, engaged father. And when you're building a company and you're managing people and you have all of this stuff happening, like traveling and events and stuff like that. I just had to recalibrate a lot of my life to make sure family comes number one.
Yeah.
And it's no easy feat, but I think that's the biggest thing I'm working on every day at the moment, is just working on my health so I can have more energy for my kids, be more present, be more proactive and taking them places on the weekend and stuff like that. So that's just something I'm doing personally. Yeah.
I appreciate the vulnerability, my man. Really, really awesome.
All good, man. Yeah.
Thank you for the listeners for getting all the way to the end of this podcast. As always, check out Dane's stuff. Check out his offers, his social media, his everything, his website. And of course, share this podcast around, guys. Don't be selfish with this. If you got value from this, share this with a friend that you think got value from it or will get value from it. And for the last time, Dane, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me, dude.